The fluorescent lights in the community hall hum like a swarm of angry bees. It is 2026, 29 years since the report came out. 29 years since the country looked us in the eye and said they were sorry for taking our children. I am sitting in the third row. My back is straight. My hands are folded in my lap. I am wearing the purple scarf my sister knitted for me. It is the color of mourning. It is the color of the flowers that grow by the creek where they took her. The man on the stage is talking about progress. He is talking about healing and closing the gap. He uses words like reconciliation and systemic reform. His voice is smooth. It sounds like water running over stones. But it does not reach me. I am thinking about a yellow dress. It had small white daisies on the collar. That was the last thing she wore when they lifted her into the back of the white sedan. She was 4 years old. Her name is Sarah, or it was Sarah. I do not know what they call her now. I stand up before the speeches are finished. The plastic chair screeches against the floor. People turn to look. I do not care. I walk out into the cold morning air of Canberra. The Parliament House sits on the hill like a giant concrete bunker. It holds the secrets of 1,000 mothers. It holds the paper trails that lead to nowhere. I have a folder under my arm. It is thin. It contains everything the government says exists about my daughter. 3 pages. Most of the lines are covered in thick black ink, redacted. That is the word they use. It means they know something I am not allowed to hear. I walk toward the Department of Indigenous Affairs. My knees ache. The cold gets into my bones these days. I have been to this building 42 times in the last decade. The security guard knows my face. He does not ask for my ID anymore. He just sighs and points toward the elevators. He thinks I am a ghost. Maybe I am. I am a woman who stopped living in 1994. Everything after that has been a long, slow walk through a desert. The elevator doors slide shut. I watch the numbers climb. Level 4, records and archives. The air up here smells like old paper and burnt coffee. It is the smell of a machine that eats lives and turns them into file numbers. I walk to the desk. The woman behind the glass is young. She has blonde hair tied in a tight bun. She looks like she wasn't even born when the report was signed. She looks like she has never lost a night of sleep over a child's cry. I place my folder on the counter. I tell her my name. I tell her my daughter's name. Sarah Jane Miller. Born May 14, 1990. Taken from the mission in October 1994. I tell her I am here for the unredacted files. I tell her about the anniversary. I tell her the Prime Minister said today is a day for truth. The girl looks at her screen. She types, tap, tap, tap. The sound is like a hammer nailing a crate shut. She frowns. She bites her lip. She looks at me through the glass. Her eyes are full of a pity that makes me want to scream. She says she is sorry. She says the system shows the records were moved during the 2018 digital migration. She says there was a server error. She says the physical files were lost in a warehouse flood 3 years ago. She uses the word unfortunate. She says they are doing everything they can to recover the data. It is the same script I heard last year. It is the same script I heard 5 years ago. The words change slightly, but the answer is always the same. No, not today, not ever. I lean against the glass. I want to break it. I want to reach through and grab the keyboard. I want to find the button that releases my daughter's life. I tell her that files do not just vanish. I tell her that people do not just evaporate. I tell her that a flood does not wash away a mother's right to know where her child's bones are resting. She looks down at her desk. She tells me there are support services available. She offers me a pamphlet. It is glossy. It has a picture of a sunset on it. I take the pamphlet. I tear it in half. The sound of the paper ripping is the only honest thing in the room. I walk away. I do not take the elevator. I take the stairs. Each step is a memory. 1. The way her hair smelled like wood smoke. 2. The way she gripped my thumb when she was scared. 3. The way she screamed for me when the car door slammed. 4. The silence that followed. The silence that has lasted for 32 years. I walk out into the street. The sun is higher now. The anniversary crowds are gathering. There are flags everywhere. Black, red, and yellow. People are holding hands. They are singing songs about belonging. They think the war is over. They think because there is a statue and a holiday, the wound has closed. But the wound is still bleeding. It is bleeding in the basements of government buildings. It is bleeding in the hearts of women who wake up at 3 a.m. smelling baby powder that isn't there. I find a bench in the park. I sit down and open my folder. I look at the redacted pages again. I try to read between the black lines. I imagine what is hidden there. Maybe it says she was happy. Maybe it says she asked for me. Maybe it says she was told I didn't want her. That is the fear that keeps me awake, that she grew up believing I gave her away, that she thinks I am the villain in her story. The state stole her body, but they stole my character too. They rewrote me as a ghost who didn't care. A young woman walks past. She has a toddler with her. The little girl is wearing a yellow coat. She is laughing. She trips on a twig and starts to cry. The mother scoops her up instantly. She kisses her forehead. She whispers into her ear. The child calms down. It is so simple. It is so natural. It is a fundamental law of the universe. A child cries, and a mother answers. But they broke that law for us. They suspended the gravity of our love. They decided our children didn't need our whispers. I wonder if Sarah has children of her own now. I do not even know if she is alive. I check the missing persons lists every month. I check the death notices in the papers. I search social media for faces that look like mine. Sometimes I see a woman in the supermarket with my cheekbones or my eyes. I follow her for a moment. I wait for her to look at me. I wait for a spark of recognition. But there is never anything. Just the confused look of a stranger being stared at by an old woman. I go back to my hotel room. It is a small room paid for by the advocacy group. There is a tea kettle and a single bed. I turn on the television. The news is showing highlights of the anniversary. The prime minister is hugging an elder. They are both smiling. The newsreader says this is a historic turning point. She says the nation is finally moving forward. I turn off the television. The silence returns. It is heavy. It sits on my chest like a stone. I pull out a piece of paper and a pen. I write a letter. I have written hundreds of them. I address it to the minister. I address it to the premier. I address it to the archive. I tell them I am still here. I tell them I am 74 years old. I tell them I do not have another 29 years to wait. I tell them that lost is not an answer. A set of keys is lost. A pair of glasses is lost. A human being is suppressed. I look at the photo I keep in my wallet. It is the only one I have. It is blurry. It was taken at a community barbecue a week before she was taken. She is holding a piece of watermelon. Her face is sticky. She is squinting at the sun. I touch her face with my finger. The paper is thin and worn. It is starting to crack at the edges. I am terrified that one day the image will fade away entirely. I am terrified that if the photo disappears, she will truly be gone. I think about the people who took the files. Did they go home to their families that night? Did they tuck their children into bed? Did they feel the weight of what they were doing? Or was it just paperwork to them? Just another box to move? Just another entry to delete? How do you explain to a bureaucrat that a missing line on a spreadsheet is a hole in a woman's soul? You can't. They are trained not to see us. They are trained to see cases. Cases can be closed. Mothers cannot. I walk to the window. The lights of the city are blinking. It is a beautiful city. It is a city built on the foundations of my people's grief. Every stone in these buildings was paid for with the lives of our children. They say they are sorry. They say they want to heal, but healing requires the truth. And the truth is locked in a vault they claim doesn't exist. The truth is buried under layers of black ink and excuses about server migrations. I lie down on the bed. I do not undress. I am too tired to move. I close my eyes, and I try to remember the sound of her voice. It is getting harder. I can remember the shape of her cry, but the words are slipping away. I try to hold on to the memory of her weight in my arms. I try to feel the way she used to lean her head against my shoulder. I hold my own arms across my chest. I squeeze. I try to pretend I am holding her. The morning comes too fast. The sun hits the wall of the hotel room. It is a new day in Australia. The anniversary is over. The flags will be taken down. The speeches will be filed away in the same archives that hold my daughter's ghost. The politicians will move on to the next crisis. The public will feel good about themselves because they watched a documentary and felt a moment of sadness. I get up and wash my face. I put on my purple scarf. I pack my thin folder. I go down to the lobby. The woman at the front desk asks if I had a nice stay. I tell her I am still looking for my daughter. She looks confused. She doesn't know what to say. She gives me a polite nod and goes back to her computer. I walk out the door. I am going back to the department. I am going back to the glass window. I am going to sit in the lobby until they call the police. And when the police come, I will tell them my name. I will tell them my daughter's name. I will tell them she was taken in a white sedan in 1994. I will tell them that I am not leaving until the black ink is gone. I walk past the Parliament building again. The grass is perfectly manicured. The fountain is spraying water into the air. Everything looks clean. Everything looks orderly. But beneath the surface, there is a deep, dark silence. It is the silence of the stolen. It is the silence of the mothers who are still waiting. I am one of them. I am a part of the landscape now. A permanent fixture of the Australian story. The woman who refuses to forget. I reach the building. I walk through the doors. The security guard looks up. He sees the purple scarf. He sees the folder. He sees the look in my eyes. He doesn't say a word. He just steps aside and lets me through. I walk to the elevator. I press the button for level 4. The doors open. I walk to the desk. The blonde girl is not there today. It is an older man. He looks tired. I place my folder on the counter. I do not wait for him to ask. I tell him I am Sarah Jane Miller's mother. I tell him the files are not lost. I tell him they are just hidden. I tell him I have all day. I tell him I have the rest of my life. He looks at me for a long time. He doesn't type. He doesn't look at his screen. He just looks at me. He says he will see what he can find. He walks into the back room. I sit down in a plastic chair. I wait. I listen to the hum of the lights. I listen to the sound of my own breathing. I wait for the truth to come out of the shadows. I wait for the daughter who was stolen from the daisies. I wait for the system to break. I am still waiting. I will always be waiting. I look at the clock on the wall. The second hand ticks. Every tick is a second she spent without me. Every tick is a second I spent without her. The room is quiet. The hallway is empty. The files are somewhere behind that door. They are sitting in the dark, waiting for someone to turn on the light, waiting for someone to say the words that cannot be unsaid. I am the only one left to speak them. I am the only one who remembers the yellow dress. I am the mother, and I am not going anywhere.